It's always a great honor and a privilege to be up here at Jikoji. Have an unusually full house today, which is very nice. There's something very special about this this smaller zendo, where we can all sit so closely together and feel each other's presence. Hear the breaths and slight movements. If you've heard me speak here before, you know I'll say a few words that I prepared, and then hopefully we'll still have a little time at the end if there's questions or any discussion that people would like to have. This morning I'd like to return to some topics that I've spoken of here before: belief and effort. To me, these are really the two inescapable topics of Zen and Buddhism. Our resident teacher, Michael Newhall, first began inviting me up here to teach about 5 years ago. And I feel a bit guilty sometimes that I mostly talk about the same things. But each time I'm scheduled to speak, I find myself thinking about what topics are most on my mind, and I keep coming back to these. Probably a big part of the reason is that as a parent, my kids are often asking what I believe, what I think is true or not true. And over the years, some of these have been relatively easy, like explaining that I don't believe in Santa Claus. But some are harder, like whether I believe all the stories that are told about the Buddha. And sometimes I have to think hard about my answers, because I know that the way I answer these questions may affect what they end up believing. And it isn't just children who ask these questions. Although I was ordained by our founding teacher, Kōben Chino Urigawa Roshi, about 15 years ago now, I've never lived as a cloistered monk. I've always lived as a householder priest out in the secular world with a family and a job. And in most of my life, I don't hide that I'm a Buddhist, but I don't publicize it either. But people in my life will often find out. Sometimes they read something that I've written in Tricycle, or sometimes they see that I'm speaking here. And so people at work or in other settings will ask me, what does it mean to be a Buddhist? What do Buddhists believe? The Buddha spent very little time talking about what we usually think of as life's great mysteries, like the origin of the universe or the existence of God. He taught instead that many of these things are fundamentally unknowable. There's nothing wrong with believing in God as a Buddhist, but Buddhism doesn't require that belief. There's nothing wrong with believing in an afterlife, but Buddhism doesn't require that belief either. And most importantly, our experience of sitting, practicing as we have here this morning, doesn't depend on whether we believe in those things or not, doesn't change if we believe those things or not. For Buddhists, all those beliefs are strictly optional. Buddhism in general, and our practice here in particular, just doesn't focus on any of that. In part because of this, some people will say that Buddhists don't really believe in anything, that we are a religion without faith. But I don't think that's quite right either. We do believe in something, and I think what we believe in most of all is practice, is effort. We believe that through our practice, we can find the essential Dharma, the essential teachings, It takes an act of faith to get up early in the morning, to come sit in the cold, to spend your Sunday at a temple. But it's not a faith in a higher power. It's a faith in ourselves, in our own practice, our own effort, and in our own ability to follow the Buddha's example. Most of you probably know the story of the Buddha, born about 2,500 years ago. He left home and wandered through what is now Nepal and India before finding enlightenment while sitting under a tree, what we now call a Bodhi tree or awakening tree, in what is now the small Indian town of Bodh Gaya. The Buddha's title literally means the awakened one. He was born with a different name, Siddhartha Gautama, and we know him by many names now, like the world-honored one and Shakyamuni, the sage of the Shakyas. But mostly we call him the Buddha, because from the start, the Buddha Dharma, what we call Buddhism, has been all about that first waking up. Every ordained Zen Buddhist can trace his or her lineage all the way back to the Buddha. When I was ordained in this temple, Koban gave me a paper showing my lineage, which shows him as my teacher, and then his teacher before that, and his teacher before that, all the way back, teacher to teacher, to the Buddha himself. The Buddha, the original awakened one, is also our original teacher. When we perform the morning service, as we did just a few minutes ago, we call out several of these teachers to express our special gratitude. One of these is Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma lived about 1,200 years ago, so he stands historically about halfway between us and the Buddha. And that's how I always think about him, halfway between us and the Buddha. From a modern perspective, the life of the Buddha is mostly lost to legend. And so, when my daughters ask if the various stories about the Buddha are true, I have to admit that I don't really know. No one really knows. It's easy to believe some of them, and hard to believe all of them. It's relatively easy to believe that he was born a prince and eventually gave up his life of luxury for the rigors of intense spiritual practice. It's much harder to believe that a flock of snails gathered on his head to protect him from sunburn. As with Jesus and other people of that time, everything that comes down to us about the Buddha was written long after he died and has almost certainly been edited by many hands. But Bodhidharma, as I would say, is only about half lost to legend. Some of the stories about him, like about him sitting for so many years in a cave that his legs fell off, some of those probably aren't true. So Bodhidharma also has his share of snail stories. But unlike the Buddha, we have a few writings that survive from roughly Bodhidharma's time. And among these writings is a short biography of Bodhidharma, which goes something like this. He was the third son of an Indian king. His divine insight was clear. Whatever he heard, he understood. His ambition lay in the Mahayana path, and so he put aside his layman's robes for the black robe of a monk. He merged with the sagely lineage and made it flourish. His dark mind was empty and quiescent. His virtue surpassed that of the leaders of his age. Lamenting the decline of the true teachings in the outlands, he subsequently crossed distant mountains and seas, traveling about propagating the teachings in Han and Wei in northern China. Of scholars who had extinguished mind, there was none who did not come to have faith in Bodhidharma. In China, Bodhidharma became the first patriarch of what we now call the Zen school of Buddhism. And what distinguished his teaching from all the other Buddhist lineages already thriving in China was his emphasis on awakening, right now, through practice. Other lineages had started to turn Buddhism into something more like a conventional religion, with complex beliefs and ceremonies. The Pure Land sect, for example, taught and still teaches that you could find salvation through faith and ritual by having Amida, another incarnation of Buddha, intercede on your behalf. But Bodhidharma took our practice back to its simplest form. In one of the few sermons of his that remain, he said, "Whatever you do, wherever you are, that's your real mind. That's your real Buddha. Beyond this mind, you'll never find another Buddha. To search for awakening or nirvana beyond this mind is impossible." This is why we believe so much in practice, in making an effort in the here and now. Sitting is a chance to experience our true mind right here. Bodhidharma says later in this sermon, "To find a Buddha, all you have to do is see your own nature. Your nature is the Buddha. If you don't find your nature and run around all day looking somewhere else, you'll never find a Buddha. The truth is, there's nothing to find." Zazen, literally sitting Zen, is a chance to wake up to our true nature without quite so many distractions pulling at our attention, lulling us into our usual half-sleep. It is our own attempt to find a middle way between our hectic everyday lives and some sort of complete isolation. It is not sensory deprivation exactly, but it helps us calm the mind. We keep our eyes open, but we face a plain wall. We focus on our breathings. We relax our bodies. We don't force our thoughts away, but we allow them to come or go, watching them arise, but trying not to become too attached to them. We just sit here together and allow ourselves to be aware. As Bodhidharma himself said, "Buddha is Sanskrit for aware, miraculously aware. Responding, perceiving, arching your brows, blinking your eyes, moving your hands and feet, it's all your miraculously aware nature. And this nature is the mind, and this mind is the Buddha, and the Buddha is the path, and the path is Zen." I think this is a very nice distillation of what we believe. About 400 years after Bodhidharma, the great teacher Eihei Dogen brought Soto Zen to Japan. Dogen is another one of those teachers we mentioned in our service. Living only 800 years ago, Dogen is really a true historical figure, and we know almost everything about his life. He was something of a Buddhist prodigy, ordained at a young age, and he studied with many of the great Japanese masters of his time. Eventually, he undertook what was then the very dangerous journey to China, and studied there with one master after another, until he had his own awakening, what he called dropping away of body and mind. Several volumes of Dogen's teachings are preserved for us and remain widely studied in Japan and here and elsewhere. But really, Dogen's teachings are no different from Bodhidharma's or from the Buddha's. His focus, like theirs, is on our basic practice. "Although this inconceivable Dharma is abundant in each person," he explained, "it is not actualized without practice, and it is not experienced without realization." In one of Dogen's books, he tells this story from the early days of Buddhism. The king of a country in eastern India invited a Buddhist master to a feast, in the course of which he asked, "Everyone is reciting scriptures, why don't you?" The master explained, "Breathing out, I do not follow myriad objects. Breathing in, I do not dwell on mental or physical elements. I always recite such a scripture, hundreds of thousands of millions of volumes." That really is the essence of Zen. Practice is our scripture. Sitting, breathing. Surely there is nothing wrong with reading scripture. In preparing my talks, I often go back and reread the words of the Buddha, Bodhidharma, and Dogen, and I've now read some of them aloud to you today. But all of our teachers agreed that you don't need to read any of that to be enlightened, to be awakened. You don't need to believe that the Buddha lived, that Bodhidharma actually traveled from India to China, or even that Dogen brought Soto Zen to Japan. All you need to do is practice. All you need to do is make the effort. I don't mean to make this sound easy. Practice is often difficult. The effort required is very real. At times, the effort can feel too great. Anyone who can read can recite a scripture, but to sit wholeheartedly, with true concentration, even for a few minutes, can be very difficult. Some of you probably found our sitting today difficult. I usually do. There are many mornings when I can't get myself out of bed to sit, when the temptations of sleep or work or even just breakfast are too great. And that's why I don't think it's quite right to say that Buddhism is a religion without faith. It takes faith to persevere in our practice. It might be easier to spend our Sunday somewhere else, but we believe in coming here. We believe in practice. We believe in making that effort. Dogen tells another story about a famous statesman in the Tang Dynasty who visited a local Zen master. When the master explained our very simple practice, the statesman was not impressed. He said to the master, "Even a 3-year-old child can say this." The master replied, "A 3-year-old child may be able to say it, but an 80-year-old man cannot practice it." Although it is difficult, we practice anyway, because we know in the end that awakening is possible. This is what the Buddha showed us through his example, and what he is still showing us. That is our one true faith. Through diligent practice, through concentrated effort, awakening is possible. Right now. Thank you for joining me in that practice.